Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves, you're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit NCL.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry the Bahamas and USA.
It's time to wake to sleep with the number one sleep authority. Sleep Science Today and Sleep Better Tonight.
Have you ever wondered why your child fights sleep even when they're exhausted? Well, we're going to learn about that and more on today's show. This is Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Anna Baker, who is an Australian celebrity baby whisperer. So, Anna, welcome. We're glad to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, man. I sound amazing.
Well, you are amazing. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. When you say baby whisperer, what does that mean?
Well, look, parents do love me, right? So I am all about safe sleep and helping your baby sleep. Because let's be honest, if your baby's not sleeping, it means that parents aren't sleeping. And that is not how you want to run a household.
I can only imagine. So now, you know, obviously, when you've got a newborn, you're going to expect that you're going to be up for feedings and, you know, different types of caring for the baby. So are we talking newborns? Are we talking children? What are we talking about here?
Look, you can start safe sleep and get your baby sleeping from newborn, right? We work with children's kids from newborn all the way to age 8. And it's not about cried out. There's a real misconception behind that. So for an example, I'll have parents say, oh my gosh, I had to take a shower holding my baby. I was going to the toilet holding my baby. Well, you actually don't want that. You want to be able to put your baby down. And if you put your baby down and it's going to cry for a couple of minutes, that's okay, because sometimes they do settle back to sleep. If not, that is when you want to go help your baby to sleep, because you can't be holding your baby all the time. And let's be honest, when they say sleep, when your baby sleeps, how is that possible? You know, you have dishes, you've got laundry, you've got other kids. There's a lot of factors in that you can't sleep when your baby sleeps. So it's about starting healthy habits from when they're young, teaching them routine, teaching them when it's time to go to sleep. Basically, you're the boss teaching your baby boundaries in the most gentle way possible.
Right. Wow. But it sounds like with that, you also have to teach yourself boundaries so that you can stick with the program, so that you as the parent also are able to get good sleep, right?
Absolutely. And that's actually a really good point, because a lot of parents say to me, oh, I feel so mean teaching my baby to sleep. But if you are bouncing your baby or walking your baby around the block or driving your baby for an hour and a half in the car, trying to get them to go to sleep, that is when you should start healthy methods to teaching them to sleep in their bed. Now, I'm not saying to give up, you know, holding your baby, because I'm all about, you've got a newborn, you can still hold your baby, you can let your family hold your baby, but then you also want to teach them healthy ways to sleep independently in their cot.
Right, right. So, all right, so let's kind of start from the beginning and work our way through. So,
and how much time do we have?
we got plenty of time. We got a whole, you know, 40 minutes of airtime, and we're going to fill it with all sorts of great info.
Let's get started.
Okay, so new parents have never had a child before. They have a newborn. They bring the newborn home on day one. They didn't get any manual or anything of how to operate this thing, and it starts making this alarm sound called crying. What do we do when we want to start thinking about healthy sleep for ourselves and for the baby? Step one.
Yeah, okay. So what this looks like is parents for the last 9 months, especially new parents, have read every book possible, right? They are motivated. They are ready. They have a baby. They get home from the hospital and they're like, what do we do? What do we do? You know, they're thinking is, I've got to keep this baby alive. And I hear it all the time. They're like, Anna, I've read all these books, but then I got home and what's step one, right? Step one is, let's just be practical here. Let's feed your baby. Let's change your baby and let's settle your baby. Nothing else matters. If I can give any advice to new parents, if your friends want to bring you something after you have your baby, let it be food. You don't want to be in the kitchen cooking. You don't really need flowers. food, put some food in your freezer, put some food in your fridge. Because let me tell you, if you have a baby who has reflux or colic or not a good sleeper, it sounds like crying all the time. It sounds like fighting between the parents, and it sounds like you are not sleeping. So the first advice I can give to you is put your baby down, have a quick shower, change your clothes, and then pick your baby up. You know, doing methods so simple, like let's say you're ready to go to bed, right? Okay, your baby's been fed, been changed, bedtime. It can look something so simple like picking your baby up and rocking your baby because you have a newborn. When your baby obviously hits the mattress, their eyes pop open, right? That's the most common thing. Oh, I was holding baby George, and as soon as I put George in the cot, his eyes popped open. You can still do gentle methods of picking up and putting down, picking up and putting down. That is the real misconception behind sleep training, because parents think sleep training has to happen at a certain age. But even something so gentle like putting your baby in the cot and picking your baby up to let them know that you're there and putting them down, that is a way to teach them to settle in the cot. And to many parents, you can do that, but they don't. They're like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Because when a baby cries as a newborn, instantly you run to that cot and you quickly pick them up, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But sometimes they wake up and they startle themselves. Maybe their parents don't have them swaddled or in a sleeping bag and they instantly wake up. Sometimes they need that minute to be able to fall back asleep on their own. And they can, but you just kind of have to give them that chance. So that is a really good, gentle way of putting them back to sleep. But I also think that parents, we don't want to have them to have too many expectations, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of parents will say to me, okay, I'm home now. I want my baby to sleep. Let's get into a routine. Man, I say to parents, girl, you are trying to just function. You have just had a baby 48 hours ago. And now you're home. And the best thing you can do is if your baby is breastfed, continue to try to latch on. If they're bottle fed, continue to do the burps and just focus on yourself as well. I think parents instantly go to like looking after this newborn, but they also forget to look after themselves.
Right. And that's what I was just going to ask is, so, you know, again, we're talking about, you know, brand new situation here. And obviously the parents are on edge because they're very concerned about doing the right thing for their baby, which means that they're filled with anxiety and it's going to be hard for them to sleep in general, not to mention, you know, with the baby. So what should parents start to do from the very beginning for themselves?
This is where your friends can drop food for you, because you definitely need to eat and you also need to drink water. And the biggest thing is you need to sleep as well. And it's really hard to sleep with a newborn, right? I'll have dads say, I'm the world's greatest sleeper. And then that newborn comes and they hear every little noise that it makes. And sometimes you get babies who are just generally loud sleepers, right? So parents, every time the baby moves or cries or opens its eyes, they're staring over the bassinet or they're looking at a baby monitor. And let me tell you, there are so many new baby monitors out there that I think actually give parents anxiety. Because they'll be like, Anna, she moved at 11:15, 1:45, 2:40. Like everything shows on that baby monitor, right? I'm all about simple. So get a super practical baby monitor where it's not going to tell you every little thing that your child does. Because that just gives parents instant anxiety of, oh my gosh, she's about to wake up because the phone is going off or the alarm is going off. So I think that parents forget to look after themselves. And then sleep just doesn't. You don't have one night of sleep and like, oh, you're back to normal. You know, it's consistent sleep. And I think a lot of parents, like, especially when they have a new baby, is they're both awake at the same time in the night because they both want to support each other. And even though that's really beautiful, naturally, one has to go back to work.
Right.
So if you're both not sleeping, one's going to work, one's driving a car, it's really hard to manage everyday stuff. And then trying to regulate, and you've got emotions that are everywhere. You're trying to do the right thing, but parents tend to forget to look after themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, along with that, you know, one of the things that you can find anything you want on the internet these days, but one of the things that you'll see is a debate, discussion, whatever you want to call it. Where should the baby sleep? In the bed, with the parents, in a bassinet, you know, where?
Yeah, look. Due to insurance reasons, I always say, you know, like babies can't sleep in bed with, you know, parents. But at the end of the day, a lot of people believe in co-sleeping. And I don't mind that because you are having a special bond with your baby. But also, I'm a firm believer to have your baby sleep alone in a bassinet. During the day, have them sleep in a bassinet. Have them sleep in the cot. That's where a lot of habits are created. And then we work alongside kids who are five who have always co-slept and they can't sleep by themselves, which is another factor for parents being exhausted because a lot of parents don't want to go to bed at 6:30 at night, right? So if your child is sleeping with you and going to bed at 6:30 at night, one of those parents are in there. And that just, I don't want to use the word ruins the whole night, but it just means that mom and dad are coming home from work and they're not having any time with each other because one has to go to bed. And even though some kids, some families say to me, oh, it only takes 15 minutes. As soon as you're awake, that baby's awake.
Right.
So I guess it's, you know, wherever you decide to sleep, whether, you know, you've got a newborn that's sleeping in the middle of the bed, there are these great things that you can put in the bed so you don't roll over on your child. But I think at a certain point, parents reach, they want change. And that's where a lot of sleep consultants will go into somebody's house and help them change a routine. Because you can change a baby's routine in just under 3 nights.
Okay. So, gosh, there's so many questions I have for
you. I just opened the door to your mind. Like, where do you start?
Right. And I'm going to ask the first question that's at the top of my head from this conversation. So if you have your baby sleeping in your bed with you at times, when is the right time and how is the right way to eventually move them to their own bed so that they don't have that need to be in bed with you as they continue to age?
Let me think. I think we receive most of our calls around 6 months because parents are like, oh, you know, my baby's kicking. If I roll over, he wakes up. But also they get to the point where they want to put their baby in their own room, right? Like the baby has their own room. So I would say about 6 months and you need to be ready. I always say to my staff, don't ever pressure anyone to sleep train because it is actually really hard. That's why we all have jobs, right? It's not a walk in the park. There's a lot of emotions. There's misconceptions about sleep training because like I said, we're not leaving your baby to cry it out, but your baby is going to cry because that's their form of communication. And they're saying, you know, hey, Andrew, I don't like this. Mm-hmm. And then parents are like, oh my gosh, I tried your method, Anna, for about 10 to 15 minutes and it didn't work. So what do you think they did? They reverted back to putting their baby back in bed, right? This is where find a method that works for you, be consistent, and you do it all night long. So we've got 38 sleep trainers at Sleep Baker, and they go into someone's house at night and the parents will say, because, you know, not all babies have the same method. Right. You have to find one that works for you, that's really practical, that you can stick with because it's all about consistency. And they'll be like, you know, Anna, I tried that method and it didn't work, but they only tried it for 15 minutes. We do that method all night long. So if a child wakes up, we are constantly in their room every 2 minutes until they fall asleep. And let me tell you, a 6-month-old can protest for an hour and a half, whereas I find a 6-month-old can protest longer than a 5-year-old because a 5-year-old, it's really funny because they get exhausted and they're like, okay, game over, and they go to bed. Whereas a 6-month-old, man, their protest can go crazy. And that is quite mind-blowing for parents.
So explain then, if they're protesting, i.e. crying, I'm assuming, and you've got one of your people in there with the baby, what exactly are you doing? Are you letting the baby cry? Are you picking the baby up? What are the steps?
So that's a great question. And that is where it's all about being age appropriate, right? If you have a newborn all the way to about 12 to 14 weeks, you are picking that baby up. They are relying on the touch, the smell of you. You're picking them up, you're patting them, you're putting them back down. You give them about a minute to settle, you pick them back up again. And eventually over time, you'll kind of walk around the room and then you start over and you keep doing that until they fall asleep, right? For a baby who's, you know, after 6 months, we do try to keep them in the cot. And what that looks like is you've got white noise, a dark room, and you're walking into the room. You stay for about a minute, you leave for 2 minutes, you stay for about a minute, you leave for 2 minutes. And that's what I'm talking about of like your baby is going to cry, but you're leaving them for 2 minutes. It's not about letting them scream the house down. It's giving them time to try to independently settle on their own. And if they can't, you go back in there and you let them know that you're there by touch. Right. Uh-huh. And I always say to the parents, the first 30 to 45 minutes, your baby doesn't want to see you. right? But then after that, this is where babies are so smart. They realize, okay, she's not picking us up. So every time you touch them, they're constantly like grabbing you, right? And I say to parents, if you're going to do this on your own, that's great, but stick to it. So don't do your little ninja crawl out of the room. You want your baby to know when you walk in the room and when you walk out of the room. Because it's really funny because when you try to be super quiet around a baby, I swear they can hear you crunch a chip down the hall with the door closed, right? They are listening. So it's all about, waiting 2 minutes, walking in the room, giving them pats. Touch is a form of communication for them. They know that you're there. And then, also I've heard some parents say, oh, can I look at my child in the eye? Well, yes, you can. Right? As if I'm going to say to a parent, oh, just pat Tommy, but look at him to the side. Don't make eye contact. Absolutely. This is where it's about being practical. You walk in that room, let your baby know that you're there, offer them some time, help them try to settle, and then you step out of the room and you let them try to independently settle. And that is where sometimes we are doing this for an hour and a half. So we're not leaving your baby to cry it out. We are actually giving them time, assisting them, giving them time, and then leaving the room. And that's that sounds confusing, right? Your parents are probably listening like, okay, so write this down. 2 minutes out, 1 minute in, and you do that until they fall asleep. And let me tell you, babies are smart. Sometimes a baby will poo in the night because they want to be picked up. I've had babies that will bang their head on the cot because it like alarms parents, right? Or they'll stick their finger down their throat and vomit. And you're thinking, how do they know? Oh, they know. Everything possible always happens at night. Parents are sleep deprived. Mental health kicks in. And so they think the worst, like, oh my gosh, something's wrong with my child. No, they are playing you.
Right. Well, that leads right into my next question. I'm going to ask you the question and then we're going to take a break and we'll come back and answer the question. My question is, so when the baby is crying, what is it that they're actually saying? Are they saying, I'm uncomfortable? Are they saying, I want mom or dad to be here? Are they saying, I need something? But we will find out the answer to that question when we come back after the break on Sleep Science Today. We're talking with Anna Baker, the baby whisperer. See you after the break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Be sure to visit sleepsciencetoday.com for access to all of our channels and special offers.
Sleep Science Today.
Okay, we are back on Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. Before the break, we were trying to find out when the baby is crying, what are they really saying?
So this is quite deep, right? Because there are a couple of factors here. My girls are trained, so we look for things like airway breathing. We don't really get many cases where your child has sleep apnea, but we do listen out for airway breathing. We look for things like reflux. I think that 80% of babies in Australia, I'm not really sure why, are diagnosed with reflux. Whereas when I work with a lot of my American clients, it's quite rare over there. So I'm not really sure why, but basically it's just, they're not full. They're still kind of like immature in their esophageal, right? So I see a lot of parents that don't really know how to handle reflux. Or maybe it's something so simple like they're too hot or they're too cold. And those are factors that a baby isn't going to sleep. Maybe their room is so bright that they can see around. It's keeping them overstimulated. And another factor that parents never think about is those baby monitors that go over the cot have a little red light, right? Babies stare at it. Oh my gosh, find a piece of blue tack or duct tape and you cover that bad boy because a baby will find any light. So when we go to houses at night, sometimes it's an easy fix where we don't need to go there all night. We're just there for a couple hours and we look to see how parents are doing things. And it's not that they're doing it wrong. They just need some guidance. So your baby doesn't need to be dressed in 6 layers, right? And I think that's because they get overheated. So that is one factor that we see all the time. We also see reflux. And when I say reflux, it means that parents will feed a baby, burp for a couple of minutes, and put them back down. And they're honestly in pain. And that's where, you know, when we can see that your child has reflux, we can help parents manage it because it's something that you're not going to cure. But even burping your baby for 20 minutes to get the trapped gas out of them definitely helps. But even if you have a reflux baby, they are going to cry, right? Because they are in pain. So I think it's about recognizing that. But also you have factors where babies are saying, hey, I don't want to sleep by myself, or hey, I don't know how to go to sleep by myself. And that's when they really start to protest cry. So I think looking at all these different factors, whether it's, I'm a huge believer of white noise. I'm not saying to blast white noise by their ear, but somewhere in their room, you know, that you want to be able to walk out of your room, have a dinner party downstairs where your baby can't hear. Right? Because you'd also don't want to be walking around the house like a mouse. I've had parents say to me, oh, we don't flush the toilet at night or run the dishwasher. I'm like, why? You want to be able to live your life, not have your baby live your life, right? So turn on that white noise, have a dark room. I love swaddling a baby or even putting them in a sleeping bag. That helps them also get into a deep sleep because they're not flying around and moving. But even with all these factors, sometimes we get a call because a baby's having a regression. So that's where you have to look at all the factors of why your baby would be crying. So I guess, you know, that brings up a good point. I should really make a checklist so parents can look at all these factors, right? I think that's actually a really good cheat sheet. Thank you for that.
Sure. Well, okay. So another follow-up question, though, that I'm thinking about is you made a point that babies will find light. And so you want to be able to, you know, have a dark room. Well, practically, if the parents are going to be going into the room and it's pitch black, some people use a little nightlight or something like that. Pros, cons, what should they do so that they don't stub their toe and trip?
I'm in two minds about that. I know. I hope there's no Legos on the floor. I'm in two minds about this, right? Look, it depends on like daylight savings and all that, right? Because light does come to the blinds and the curtains. But if you're at the point of the night where it's pitch black, have a light on down the hall or in the bathroom. So that you can still see, so you open up your baby's door and you walk in and you still have a little bit of light down the path is great. I'm not a huge believer of putting it in their room because when you have a light or a nightlight in the room and then when you turn it off, they get some sense of panic. And then that's when they really start crying because they see the light's gone. Whereas if they know the light's down the hall, it's not directly in their room. So I'm not a huge fan of a nightlight. Sometimes when we sleep train, you know, anywhere from 3+, I will consider it. But I do find for the reasons of like melatonin, I'm all about dark rooms. Dark rooms, white noise.
Great, great. Okay. So we talked a lot about babies. Let's move forward a little bit. So they start to grow and they start to become little children. What types of issues do you see with children?
That's a great one. So I see a lot of kids who mock signs of ADHD or they get in trouble at school. And the main factor is because they're not sleeping at night. And so they can't regulate. They struggle to communicate. And when you tell them no, oh, their world just falls apart, right? So we work up to age 8. And when you have a child anywhere past 5, they panic. So a lot of parents will say, like, you know, I went to a house a couple of weeks ago and the little girl was 8 and she's a very beautiful girl. She just doesn't know how to independently sleep. Mom and dad take turns sitting on her bed at night and it can take up to 2 hours for her to go to sleep. So by the time, you know, 10 o'clock rolls around, she finally has fallen asleep. Dad's gone to bed and then mom's there by herself. And it's just, it's not the best way to end your night. But also, you have to think of the factors that little 8-year-old isn't getting the best quality of sleep at night if she's going to bed at 10 and she's waking up at 6. So that is where they're going to act out the next day. They're not taking in the full capacity of learning because they are actually quite sleep deprived. And, you know, when we go into people's houses, you know, they might have really good kids, but they still struggle with sleep. So one girl who was 8 threw my purse out the window. Threw my purse out the window, right? And you're like, well, why would she do that? Well, she panicked because all of a sudden she learned that she had to go to sleep on her own. And so I was chasing her back to her bedroom because it's all, you know, we spoke about the routine, what it was going to look like. I walked her back to her room each time. And as we were walking back, she saw my purse, went to the balcony and chucked it off.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just, it was one of those situations where they're not naughty kids. They just panic and they get a lot of separation anxiety at that age. It's even so, like, this little girl that I was training, the mom said to me, she couldn't even go into the petrol or the gas station and leave her to go pay for things because this little girl had anxiety. And I do see hand in hand, like in Australia, when we do school drop-offs, you know, all the cars are lined up. And when you get to the front, you can let your child out. And if your child has separation anxiety, it means you have to park your car, find parking in that school, park your car, walk your child in because you know that they're going to have a tantrum and they can't get out of that car. Right. Wow. So teaching your child to independently sleep on their own helps with separation anxiety. I've had one of the girls, you know, a lot of tantrums happen at night. So it's not smooth sailing. When you have kids who are over the age of five, a lot of parents panic and they want the easy way out because they don't know how to deal with the tantrums. I mean, we've had a vase thrown at us. We've had a little girl, there was hanging pictures off the wall and she walked by it and knocked them all off the wall because she was running around the house every time we were trying to walk her back to bed. And again, like I said, these are not naughty kids. These are tantrums that are coming out because they are so scared to go to bed on their own. So at that age, we find an even medium for them where that is where I'd put a nightlight in the room. And you know what? At 8 years old, anywhere from 5 to 8, because normally you stop white noise between 3 and 4, right? Parents will just say they just kind of gave it up. Mm-hmm. If you've got a kid who, you know, we're going in there at night and they're, you know, between 5 and 8, I offer that white noise again, or I offer something like a podcast. I wouldn't give them, you know, an iPad because it's really important to not have, you know, any technology 30 minutes before bed. But that's also really hard because a lot of people at, you know, a lot of kids at the age of 8, I'm finding that parents are like, well, we don't know what to do. So we gave them the iPad. They fall asleep watching a movie. Well, that's not really healthy because sometimes they're falling asleep at 10 o'clock at night. And that's right. Just a mask of getting them to independently sleep on their own is with that iPad. So let me tell you, parents, if I can give you any advice, if your child isn't sleeping at age 4, it's only going to get worse.
Wow. So wait a second here. So if these kids that you were describing, 5 years old, 6 years old, are having this, you know, anxiety about going into their own room to go to bed, that must mean that they were co-sleeping with their parents up until that age or close.
Not even co-sleeping. It can mean that you can maybe sit at the end of their bed. Maybe you're laying with them in bed. Or I've had a family in Dubai that used to sit on the couch. They used to sit on the couch outside the little girl's room. And she was great. She would fall asleep within 10 minutes, right? But then the parents are like, ooh, they looked at it from a health point of view. And they were like, no, she's 5 now. She needs to learn how to sleep on her own. And I must say, that was probably the quickest time for a 5-year-old I've ever had, where it was probably like 25 minutes of her coming out of her room. And she did that a period of two nights in a row. But on the third night, she knew what the expectations were. Some kids grasp it straight away. Right? Because some kids take pride in the fact that they can do it on their own. And some kids struggle. And that's where when you have a child that struggles, it's about putting in those firm boundaries. It's not about being a mean parent. It's not about being a gentle parent. It's about letting your child know these are the boundaries and you must stick to them. But when you have an 8-year-old, I'm not going to lie, it's really, really hard because parents break down. They try to negotiate with you. That's when you realize your child's going to be a CEO because they're hungry, they're thirsty. All of a sudden, they want to eat their vegetables. They'll negotiate, I'll eat my vegetables if you sit with me tonight. And parents get to the point, it's 11 o'clock at night and they don't know what to do. So they revert back to sitting in bed. So parents, if you are not sure, call a sleep consultant because the best thing you can give your child is the gift of sleep. And it's not something that happens overnight. You continue to work on it because when you get to an adult, you don't, I feel sad when I hear adults say, oh, I was actually a really bad sleeper as a child. And then the grandparents will say to me, yeah, because we just didn't know. We just, you know, you just lay in bed, or sometimes kids will play to 10 o'clock at night and they fall asleep on the floor. But there are things you can do just like adults to go to sleep. And it's having a routine. It's being consistent. And sometimes it doesn't work the first couple of nights. That is where you just have to be consistent. It's like training your brain to start over.
Okay, great. So question related to that, and then we're going to go into a break and we'll come back and answer it. The question is, when you're dealing with making this behavioral change for a child, what is the normal expected amount of time in terms of days or weeks or whatever to make that behavioral change if there is one?
Yes.
But
so
before you answer,
I have to wait. Okay.
You got to wait too. And we're taking a break. And then we
this
will
is gonna
be back
a good
and,
one.
Okay. Well, we're coming back to a good one. So hang your hats and we'll be right back on Sleep Science Today.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Be sure to visit sleepsciencetoday.com for access to all of our channels and special offers.
Sleep Science Today. And sleep better tonight.
All right, we're back on Sleep Science Today, hanging on with bated breath, waiting for the answer to that cliffhanger question. Go ahead. How long does it take for behavior change to happen?
Okay, so on paper, 3 nights, right? And you'll notice a change. But it's all dependent on the parents, right? Sometimes parents get really motivated to do things. And then when it gets quite late, they tend to cut corners. And when you cut corners, it means setbacks. Because sometimes when you cut a corner, you'll say like, oh, you know what, Anna? You said to me to not stay in her room longer than a minute. I'm all about checking in. You've got those older kids. You still have to check in because that anxiety is real and it's full force and everything is going on in their head. They can see they can get out of bed. So the best way for you to help them manage it is just doing check-ins, making sure they're okay. I always say to parents, try not to say, hey, I'll be back in 2 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, because they'll be waiting. And they'll make that 2 or 3 minutes really, really negative. So I always say, I'm going to go check the laundry. I'm just going to go do this. I'm going to go to the toilet. I'll come right back, because they don't really know when you're coming, but they're also getting really, really tired, right? So doing those check-ins. But if you cut corners and you say, oh, you know what, Anna, I noticed that if I stood by her. So normally parents will say, I've been sitting on her bed for an hour and a half, but now I've been standing by her door, right? And then they stand by the door for 20 minutes and she falls asleep. Yep, that's much quicker than an hour and a half, but that is where you are masking the problem. So this is where, whenever I say to parents, if you're doing this together, make sure it's at the right time. Don't do it on a Tuesday night when you have a 7 a.m. work meeting that you have to prepare for, right? Because let me tell you, your night is not going to be fun. You're going to have lots of night wake-ups. You're going to have a child that's having a tantrum and you're going to feel rattled the next day. And then you wake up feeling like a terrible person when you've got to present to the board about your findings with work, you know? Yeah. So make sure both parents are on the same page, because if you're not, let's be honest, you're going to start fighting, right? You're both going to go to bed angry, and also you're not going to follow through. So you may have started the plan of sleep training and helping your child sleep, but then by 11 o'clock, you guys have been fighting. You both get up, and let me tell you, your child can feel that. So as much as I want to say you'd like a calm environment, it's not going to be calm, but it's going to be consistent and you're going to set boundaries and you want to be able to be like, man, that was really hard, but we got through it. Because let's be honest, if it was easy, I wouldn't have a business. I wouldn't have my girl going out at night. So, you know, it's one of those things. Find a method that works for you. Stick to it. Because at the end of the day, you want your child sleeping. You don't want them going to school tired. You don't want them to be problematic because they're tired. And it's little changes that, you know, become habits if they know what the expectations are. So it's not about being a mean parent. It's about setting your kids up for the future.
So that goes right into this question, which is, what advice do you have for a parent who is anxious about their kid feeling anxious, meaning their kid is either crying, their kid is getting out of bed, whatever it may be. So they are constantly running to be with the kid because they don't want that kid to feel anxious for even, 10 seconds. Are they helping their kid or are they doing something else?
So in terms of what would be the smoothest way to do this is, I guess, communication and plan.
Okay.
So if you decide that you want to do this on a Friday night, it can be something so easy that Monday morning, you start saying, oh my goodness, on Friday, we're going to have a new routine. we're gonna start sleeping in our bed on our own. And they'll, and you know what? They'll be like, oh yeah. The kids are like, I'm gonna do this. And mom's like, oh God, this is gonna be so easy. No. They are masking their fear because they know that it's days away, right? So let's say you're transitioning from, rather than sitting on your child's bed or laying with them at night or co-sleeping, they're going to be in their bed on their own. Great. Something so simple of maybe it's buying them a stuffed animal or a new bed toy or letting them pick it out. Maybe it's changing up their room and having new sheets on to make their bed more appealing. Even though they're going to like it in the moment, they're not going to like it on that night. Right? And having a plan. Because if you go in there like, right, stay in your bed, don't get out, blah, 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 they're going to start screaming and you're going to feel like a terrible person because as much yelling as you're doing, your child is still going to walk out of their room. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's all about communication. And also find a routine. If you're not reading to your child at night, maybe because you just didn't know or you're afraid they're going to get overstimulated, find a routine that works for you. And when I say reading, depending on how old your child is, you don't have to read for 30 minutes. Even if you do a couple quick stories and it's 4 or 5 minutes, that's the perfect amount of time. Give them a kiss and cuddle. Explain to them that they're going to bed on their own. They're going to chuck a tantrum. And let me tell you, when you leave the room, they're going to start negotiating, right? You leave the room, you walk them back to bed. Let me tell you, you're going to put your Apple Watch on. You're going to get so many steps in that night because you're going to be walking that child back to bed probably about 45 times. And it's going to go through a period where anytime you start a new routine, maybe your child sleeps all night once you lay with them. But when you're teaching a child to independently sleep, they will start night waking for a period. So people will say, oh, Anna, it actually got worse. You know, she finally went to bed after an hour and a half, but then she woke up 6 times in the night. Yes, that is normal. And you will notice that after a period of like 3 or 4 nights that it's still happening because it's teaching them consistency. So if on the first 1 or 2 days you're being consistent, but on the third day you're too tired and you're not walking them back to bed, let me tell you, it will be even harder to reset them because they can just go, you know, straight to your room. And a lot of parents will be like, I woke up and she was laying on the floor. So I think you just have to prepare yourself that you are going to have 3 really bad nights, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. But just making sure parents are communicating, making sure you're on the right page, because like I said, if you're not, the chances of you falling through with this is very slim. And again, you're not going to have a 12-year-old sleeping in bed with you, but you still don't want a 5-year-old sleeping in bed with you. You want to be able to have your own time, be able to shut off and just be adults. You know, having the child in your room changes everything dynamic in the bedroom. So
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that is sort of a theme that you have spread throughout all of the show so far is related to behavior change. And the specific point I'm getting at here is that, because I see this all the time too when I'm working with adults in insomnia, and people have a short tolerance for changes of behavior. And what I mean by that is when you make a behavior change, as you've said, it's very important to be consistent and continue with it over time, and eventually you get the behavior change. But when you first start that behavior change, your body says, oh my God, something is different. That's uncomfortable to me.
You've never heard that cry before.
Right. And you know, it's, so I get paid. Well, I tried that. Well, how long did you try it? One night, 10 minutes, an hour. Well, you know, so I always prepare them ahead of time. I say, look, we're about to make a behavior change. And what's going to happen is things are going to get worse before they get better.
Yeah,
so if you have a terrible night, and if it's, if you're saying, oh my God, it's getting worse, this guy doesn't know what he's doing, then that means you're doing exactly the right thing because your body is reacting the way we expect.
Yeah. And I think that's where I see a lot of parents want that quick solution. And it can be. It just depends on how consistent you are.
Right.
But it's hard work. And I mean, in your case, for adults, it would be even harder, right? They've had these habits for years and years and years. And I just don't know. I know that I'm a really good sleeper when I sleep. I mean, it's funny, right? Because I'm working at night with all my girls, putting all these kids to bed where I should be sleeping. But I can tell you that when I go home during the day, I'm a really good sleeper. But I don't know if I could, at my age now, cope, because, you know, you make mistakes. I don't want to be grisly to my kids. I don't want my work to reflect of how I treat them. So mm-hmm. I really make priority to my sleep and also my kids. Being a sleep consultant, I made sure that my kids were really great sleepers. Whereas now I feel like my 14 has reverted back to a newborn and all these hormones, he needs like 16 hours of sleep a night. It's hilarious. Whereas I'll have some parents be like, man, my kid goes to bed late and wakes up early. I was like, not mine. I have to wake my kids up. I mean, they could sleep through a tornado.
Right.
So that's the one thing I have definitely taken pride in, but I've worked really hard with it because it's not a solution that just happens overnight. It's constant. You go on holiday, let's say you're co-sleeping with your child, that's fine. Not every kid is going to have their own room at a hotel. But when you get back to your home, that is where you reset and you go back to the boundaries that you had and you're consistent. And kids know. Kids know. It's like muscle memory. They're like, oh goodness, we're going back home now into my bed. Yep, we had a great holiday. Now we're going home. Let's reset.
Yep. So the main lesson there is, you know, have some patience, expect things to be off before they get back on to the new schedule. I can say for adults, typically, everybody's different, but typically within the first two nights, then things start to kind of level off. And within the first week, when we finish that, they've kind of started on the new path. But longer for some people, shorter for others.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Okay. Last question for you. What is the biggest misconception that parents have about their kids' sleep?
Do I get to answer this or do I have to wait?
No, you get to answer this one because we got about a minute and a half left in the show.
Okay, so this is a great one. I work with a lot of daycares and preschools in Australia. And even the educators will say, oh, you know, Tommy, you know, I don't want him sleeping because he won't sleep at night. That's a massive misconception, right? Even if your child doesn't sleep, still have them rest, still have them laying down, because what's going to happen is they're either going to fall asleep in the car on the way home, or they're not going to be able to regulate by 4 or 5 o'clock and they're having tantrums. So if you have a child that needs to have a nap, that's okay. When do you give up naps? You give them up just before they go to school. So if you start school, let's say, I mean, in Australia, we start school at the end of January, right? If you've got a preschool that's going to to preschool every single day and they're offering naps, take it, because it's an easier transition at that age, a week before, to give up those naps. But anything before that, even if they don't sleep, encourage them to lay down because they are letting their mind settle. And that is where a lot of parents will say to me, oh, Anna, you know, he's 2. I had to give up naps because, you know, he's not sleeping at night. And of course he's not sleeping at night because he needs to sleep during the day, because sleep brings on more sleep. He can have an hour and a half nap. Put him to sleep at 11:30 a.m. Let him sleep an hour and a half. He can still go to bed between 6:30 and 7. But if they are overtired, what happens is they become overstimulated at night and their body just keeps them awake, right? So I would say that would be the misconception that I hear all the time of giving up naps. Don't give them up. If they don't sleep, that's fine. Have them just rest. They can still go to bed. I obviously don't want them sleeping for 3 hours, and you don't want them sleeping till 4 p.m. So work out a time that works best for everyone. But kids can still, even if they're low or high sleep needs, even a rest is better than nothing, because it's going to help with your tantrums in the early evening.
Right. Fantastic. Well, that closes out our show. We've run out of time here, but let's ask. So your company, Sleep Baker, where are you operating and how do people get in touch with you?
So we are Sleep Baker, all the ingredients for a good night's sleep. And we are located in Australia and Dubai, and we also are in the US. So you can go to www.sleepbaker.com. We do post online when we're going to be headed to the US, but if not, we still do a lot of Zoom calls, because you would be surprised what you can learn over Zoom, right? It's about, you know, it's about being face to face with parents. Because if I can give you any advice, if you stick to a method or a routine, great, but do not get on ChatGPT and ask how to sleep train your child when you're already doing one method, because you don't, you know, you get on there and it tells you one thing and then you should do this, but then somebody else is telling you this. So find something that works for you and stay consistent.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. This has been Anna Baker on Sleep Science Today. Stay with us on sleepsciencetoday.com, where you can find the feed for the podcast, for YouTube, and other important information. So we will see you on the next episode of Sleep Science Today.
You have been listening to Sleep Science Today, your number one sleep authority.
Sleep Science Today.